did Master Kinnaid.
At Stav Kesh? Lannery asks.
Of course. You think the Jedi Masters don't talk among ourselves about those on their great journeys?
What has he done? Lannery asks.
He fled into the Abyss of Rue. Put lives in danger.
He's gone? Breathes Lannery.
Oh no, not gone. They pulled him out and are bringing him back. They're just coming into land.
Dan Powell climbs a staircase, and a heavy door slides open before her. Wind roars, rain splashes in across the floor, and force lightning thrashes about the square of night sky revealed.
Oh, Dale, what have you done?
Lannery thinks. He has been gone for 4 days, taken with others by Master Quan Jang on a visit to the Riftlands to collect specimens for the alchemical labs here at Anil Kesh. At first, she welcomed his absence. It gave her the opportunity to study in peace with no concerns about what Dale might be doing. But her dreams these past 3 nights had been troubled. It was almost as if she knew that something terrible was going to happen. She follows the Jedi Master outside. There is someone else out there already, standing at the edge of the platform and looking east. A cloud chaser is visible, drifting down toward one of Anil Kesh's landing zones.
Master,
the young man says, turning to greet them. He barely glances at Lannery.
Master Quan Jang reports that the journeyer said nothing, but he appears fit and well.
Good, Dan Powell says. The others?
Sickened from their time in the Abyss.
He looks pointedly at Lannery then.
It is a place of dark, dangerous energies.
Lannery glances over the handrail and looks down into the chasm. She feels woozy, and it's Dan Powell's hand that steadies her.
Breathe long and deep,
the Master whispers.
The Force is very strong in you, and so the chasm plays with you.
That's what you think it is?
Lannery asks.
Playing?
Dan Powell smiles enigmatically.
A turn of phrase.
So what will happen?
Happen?
To Dale.
It's the other Jedi who replies.
We ensure that he's fit and well, unharmed from his escapades, and then we will arrest him and escort him from Anil Kesh first thing in the morning.
Escort him where?
The Jedi's face is grim.
Once beyond the temple, he can go where he wishes.
Banishment,
Lannery says.
I think we'll actually be saving his life.
So is this how my brother's sad story ends?
Lannery wonders. But she thinks not. Dale has a weight to him, increasing the farther he removes himself from the Force. In her dreams, at their worst, his end comes with terrible greatness.
I'd like to wait here for him, she says.
The cloud chaser has touched down now, visible between skeins of low cloud.
Speak to him when he arrives.
I'll wait with you.
The Jedi bows.
Journeyer Scott Yoon.
Lannery starts to object, but she realizes it was not a request.
Lannery Brock,
she says.
I know.
Scott Yoon smiles.
Afterward, bring him down to me,
Dan Powell says.
I'll go to make sure the medical bay is ready to receive those others still sickening.
Yoon bows his head as the Master turns and leaves. Lannery watches her go, surprised at Dan Powell's confidence in Dale's well-being.
I'll fetch your jacket for you,
Yoon says.
It can grow cold out here.
It takes Quan Jang and the others a surprisingly long time to reach the temple from the landing zone. Yoon tries talking, but Lannery is too distracted and troubled to enter into any meaningful conversation. Most of the time she stands with her eyes closed, her thoughts her own. It is Yoon who finally announces their arrival. They arrive at the temple on foot, Master Quan Jang in the lead. There are 10 people behind him, 3 being carried on stretchers. Even though she sees Dale with them, he seems to walk alone.
I'll go to meet them,
Yoon says.
Wait here and I'll bring your brother.
Lannery waits and watches. They climb the leg onto the temple, and Yoon meets them at the far end of the viewing platform. Dale seems even more apart from them all than she first thought. There is no expression on his face, and he doesn't seem to acknowledge where he is at all. He's more hurt than Master Dan Powell let on, Lannery thinks. But she still wants him close so that she can assess his condition for herself. And she realizes that though it has only been 4 days, she has missed her brother. Quan Zhang and the others move off into the temple, and Yun touches Dale's shoulder. Then the two of them walk toward Lannery, across the viewing platform that is buffeted by winds from below and heavy, warm raindrops from above. Dale, she says as they reach her, but his expression gives her pause. So serious. So adult. There's something expanded about him, as if since she saw him last, he has grown to fit the world he will live in. He seems assured, too, and confident, even though his skin appears burned, his eyes puffy and red.
I came to say goodbye, Lannery, he says.
The words are strange and unexpected. He turns to leave, and Scott Yoon stands before him.
You're to be arrested, and...
the journeyer begins.
There are such depths,
Dale says. He is speaking directly to Lannery. She wonders whether these are the last words they will ever share.
What did you see?
She asks.
Things you never can.
His eyes are so bright they seem to glow.
Such promises and opportunities down in the abyss. Such depths of history and potential. And now I must go elsewhere to find something more. And so...
Dale and Brock,
Yun says.
You're to accompany me to...
Dale strikes out. Lannery sees it coming and is surprised that Yun did not. But though the journeyer may be comfortable at Anil Kesh, he has yet to visit Stav Kesh to learn the martial arts. Dale's fist connects with his chin, and as Yun leans back, Dale spins and kicks him in the face. Another punch as he falls, and Lannery hears bones break even before Yun strikes the metal platform.
Dale!
Lannery shouts, but she sees her brother's determination. I cannot lose him now! She goes for him, reaching out, wishing to hold him and try to undo everything that has passed between them since leaving home. It is a naive wish, and one that suits a child more than the Jedi woman Lannery is becoming. But familial love is a powerful force in itself. From the corner of her eye, she sees Scott Yoon lift himself on one elbow and then raise his other hand, pointing toward Dale.
No! She shouts. Don't try to...
She will always wonder whether her voice gave Dale warning, and whether, in fact, she wanted that. The moment she speaks, Dale crouches and spins on one heel, his robe billowing as he brings one hand out from beneath its folds. His blaster coughs. Scott Yoon cries out and is shoved across the platform by the impact. Blood bursts from his back, and his clothing smokes.
Dale,
Lannery breathes. Feeling weak and suddenly hopeless. This is the point when everything goes too far.
Goodbye, Lannery,
he says again. And then he is gone, dashing across the platform and climbing a sloping ladder fixed into the temple's curved wall. She should stay to help Yun. She kneels briefly by his side and examines the wound, and though still breathing, she knows that he will not survive. Lannery should stay to tell Master Dan Powell what has happened. But instead, she chases her brother. Up onto the temple's high wall, across its curved roof where deep ditches channel water and moss makes the surface treacherous. Following his distant shadow through the increasing downpour until he scurries down one of the massive legs towards solid ground. Her first great journey ends, and her pursuit of her brother begins.
Your brother did this?
Tree gasped.
So he said. But how?
A word in the right ear? A rumor, a threat, a challenge? A murder?
It's monstrous. It's terrifying.
Lannery could not argue. The air was filled with violence. Smoke, screams, the pounding and roaring of weapons, and the groaning and grinding of the giant dome under stress. They had emerged onto a balcony just above the base of the central tower. To the west was the previously damaged area of the dome, with its massive buttresses and chaotic-looking repairs sealing it from the toxic air outside. and to the south, an attack was underway. Several large parts of Greenwood Station's dome had been destroyed, the ragged holes still smoking and dropping burning molten detritus to the buildings and streets far below. The dome's atmosphere screamed as it was vented to the outside, as if in distress at mixing with the toxic clouds beyond. At the nearest of these wounds in the protective skin, Lannery could see several large, bulky shapes. Battle droids, hunkered low by the hole and firing laser cannons into the city. The barrage seemed to be indiscriminate, and many fires were already taking hold. The battle droids edged forward and the first of them dropped, retros beneath its many arms, firing to ease its descent. A missile streaked from the tower above them and struck the droid. It bloomed fire, fell out of sight into a manufacturing district, and exploded. More missiles curved away from the tower, sweeping in graceful arcs and impacting the dome around the shattered area above. Some droids erupted in fiery death. Others tumbled across the outside of the dome. More dark shapes replaced them, and the barrage began again. At another smashed section, an attack ship hovered. A plasma cannon started pulsing into the ground close to the column's base. Each impact was huge and shook the city, the ground, the air itself. Explosions of fire and smoke mushroomed up, and Lannery could not help wondering how many people were dying with each impact. Beneath the central column, she thought, just where Dale would have told them Pan Deep lay. More rockets were fired from the tower, but as they approached the dome's underside, they evaporated into clouds of blazing white vapor. The attack ship had defenses. Lannery could hardly imagine the destruction involved if it succeeded in getting inside. "We've got to go!" Tree shouted above the noise, grabbing her arm. The balcony vibrated with each impact, and if the attack ship shifted its targeting by just a few degrees... "Come on," Lannery said. She grasped Tree's hand as he pulled away, squeezed to calm him. "Trust me!" Then she hauled him to the edge of the balcony and tipped over. Any normal person would have been killed instantly by the fall. But Lannery eased them down with the force, slowing their descent and landing them with barely a jolt on the street below. People ran around them in confusion and terror. No one even seemed to notice them. "Don't ever do that again!" Tree shouted, almost hysterical. "Next time I won't hold your hand!" Lannery ran, and Tree went with her. Far to the south, hidden by smoke and the haze of many weapons, a ground battle seemed to be taking place. She could not make out the details, but she could just see the sparking impacts of artillery fire speckling the outside of the dome's shell several kilometers in the distance, and the constant thump, thump of returning fire sang through the air. Hundreds of bright lights dropped from punctures in the dome. Battle droids, or perhaps even ground assault troops. A much heavier impact sounded, like Nox itself shrugging. Lannery felt a deep vibration that set buildings swaying. Glass smashed, wreckage showered down all around as weaker buildings started to break down. The air inside the dome seemed to momentarily blur, and outside the city's huge skin, the skies lit up. "Incoming plasma bombs," Lannery said. "They're being diverted for now, but they'll get through soon enough."
"So how can you help?"
"Help?
You're a Jedi, aren't you?"
"We're not magicians, Tree. You know that as well as anyone."
"But this is..."
"We get out," Lannery said, "as fast as we can. Dale thinks we died down there, and all this is just to make sure. Whatever escape route he had is hidden to us, and he'll be away and gone by now. But this, what he's caused or initiated, is all for nothing. Because we're going to survive, and we know he's still alive."
"Look!"
Tree pointed. In the distance to the north, a section of dome had slid open, and several ships rose from across the city and headed for the outside. Lannery could tell from the way they moved that they were battleships, not civilian transports. This was not yet an evacuation. As the first ship passed through the dome opening, it exploded, blossoming into a ball of fire and erupting ammunition that rained down in a beautiful, awful shower across that part of the city. The other warships powered through the destruction, another of them exploding outside and then impacting the dome half a kilometer away. The others rose clear, and though they were little more than blurred shapes beyond the dome, Lannery saw them swing around and streak to the south. "Come on," she said. "I don't think we have long."
"Until what?"
"Until we're a part of Greenwood Station's tragedy." Lannery led the way. She headed for the portion of dome already bombed years ago by the Jedi. What she had learned of Pan Deep, that the Jedi had spared it because they commissioned high-end military tech themselves, did not sit well with her. But it was not relevant to her mission to consider that right now. And she, more than anyone, knew that the Jedi often harbored secrets. She spoke into her comlink.
"Iron Hogs, prepare the ship for takeoff. There's trouble. We'll be coming in fast. Initiate ship's defenses. Shoot anything that comes close that isn't us. Got that?"
Her ship's droid crackled and spat in reply.
"And start the tracking scanner, frequency 240. You should find the signal soon enough, probably just off planet. Lock on and track it."
"What signal?"
Tree asked.
"I put a tracker on Dale's clothing," she said. "I just hope he hasn't found it."
"Or changed his outfit."
Tree was trying to joke, but Lannery could not smile. Such a small thing as a change of clothing might doom everything she had ever known. She was already living in history in the making, the tragedy of Greenwood Station that would become known across the system. If she failed to catch Dale, and his attempt to initiate the Gree Tech went wrong, then everything would be history, and there would be no one left to know it. There's still time, she thought, because she knew the device was not yet ready. The scientist had mentioned that it needed charging. She'd sensed no energy source there, nothing that might indicate that its dark matter drive had been primed or loaded. She would have known. Her teachings with Dan Powell had given her an insight into such shadowy matters. An arcane device that only needed charging before it was ready. A tracking chip that might or might not remain on Dale. Everything was suddenly so nebulous and unreliable. A war played out around them as they fled. People ran back and forth in panic, parents herding children, adults running in shouting groups, but Lannery could see some organizations starting to become apparent. Though they wore no sign or uniform, one group of men and women seemed to be part of some sort of Greenwood Station security force. They were breaking down the fencing around a compound housing several militarized cloud chasers, airships supporting heavy gun platforms, and with grav units fitted to landing gear to aid flight. As Lannery and Tree passed, the first of the airships started to hum with power. Other people bearing weapons rushed across the street ahead of them, heading south toward where the bulk of the fighting seemed to be taking place.
"They'd do better to flee," Lannery said.
"They're defending what they have," Tree said.
"This is a full-on assault, ultimate destruction, not an invasion."
They paused beneath the cover of an old factory's slumping wall. Perhaps one day this place would have been repaired, but it looked like it hadn't been used for some time, and the building's metal framework was corroding beneath the toxic atmosphere.
"Look! Invasion!"
Tree pointed south at another cloud of lights drifting down from the many damaged areas of dome. Gunfire was being exchanged, and it took several seconds for the crackling sound to become audible.
"Droids!"
Lannery said.
"They're not sending troops in because..."
A massive explosion rocked them from their feet. The ground pounded at her as she fell, and the air itself seemed to vibrate in her lungs through her chest. Lannery rolled against the building and looked back and up, astounded and sickened by what she saw. A plasma bomb had found its way through the city's defenses and impacted close to the dome's highest point, more than a kilometer above the ground. The explosion had ripped the dome open, the shattering destruction running down through the central column and bursting from it in blooming flowers of flame and blazing metal. The wide tower was crumbling from the top down, and around it, the dome's mammoth support structures were cracking and dipping, great spreads of dome rupturing and falling away. The explosion continued to expand, probing inward and touching the ground at last. A firestorm swept across the air, incinerating everything in its path. The destruction was so huge and so far away that it seemed to happen in slow motion.
"Lannery,"
Tree said.
He grabbed her arm. "Lannery!"
"Yes," she said. Tree helped her up, and they moved on. They reached the building through which they'd entered the dome not so long ago. As they went inside, they left behind a very different Greenwood station. They worked their way back through the ruined and hastily repaired area of the city, retrieving their masks from where Lannery had hidden them. But the masks had leaked away the last of their oxygen, so Lannery cast them both aside. "We've got a kilometer to go across that landscape," she said. "Follow me. Step where I step, run as fast as you can, and try not to take deep breaths."
"We'll die out there," Tree said.
"No, and once we're on the Peacemaker, I have medicine that will clean your skin and lungs."
"I don't have skin and lungs exactly like yours, human," Tree said, smiling nervously.
Lannery grabbed his shoulder, squeezed. "Close enough. Come on." She force-shoved the exterior airlock door open and ran out onto the toxic, poisonous surface of Nox. Behind them, the battle raged and the destruction continued. Out of the dome, they could see more, though the air was constantly hazed with stinking clouds of gas. Attack ships stood some distance off, firing at the dome. Way beyond the dome, a huge glow filled the sky, and Lannery guessed that the spaceport adjacent to the dome in the east had been bombed. Those few defensive ships that took off from inside and made it out without being destroyed streaked south toward the attackers, and most were blasted from the air before even entering combat. One or two made it through, spiraling up and around as their laser cannons opened up. Explosions bloomed. Burning wrecks arced down to the planet's surface. It was only the skill of their pilots that kept them aloft, but the attacking force appeared to be far superior. Lannery already felt the acidic burn on her skin and tasted it at the back of her throat, and the destruction and deaths behind her weighed heavy. Her spine tingled. The back of her neck smarted as if the accusing dead stared.
"Iron Hogs!"
The droid responded immediately. The ship was ready for takeoff. The tracker was acquired and locked on. But Dale's ship was already breaking away from orbit, and soon he would be beyond the range of their instruments. They reached the Peacemaker and boarded. And Lannery did not feel as pleased, as safe, as she should have. "Okay?" Lannery asked.
"Perfect."
Tree nodded, though he looked ready to vomit. His leku hung pale and sickly, and his eyes and nose were running.
"Strap in," Lannery said. "They'll probably see us lifting off and..."
Greenwood Station took three more direct impacts from plasma bombs. The blasts shook the Peacemaker, and Lannery quickly fired the engines and took her ship aloft, afraid that the explosions might cause tremors or eruptions around the city. She flicked on all sensors, checked systems, initiated weapon systems, and only then took time to look toward the dome. The ruptured dome was falling in great, burning, melting sheets. The city inside had become a pit of molten chaos, and billowing pillars of smoke and flame rose high above it. The sparkling, expanding clouds from the plasma impacts bloomed outward, and when they met the rank atmosphere, they formed sickly rainbows that in other circumstances might even have looked beautiful. Lannery punched it. And even flying up and away from the dying city, the stark flashes of its demise lit up the interior of the Peacemaker's cockpit.
"All those people,"
Tree said, and Lannery had never heard him sound so wretched.
"We went there, and this is the result."
"It wasn't us," Lannery said. "It was Dale."
"But if we hadn't chased him here..."
"If he's not stopped, this could happen everywhere," she said. "It shows how determined he is, and how mad."
She lowered her voice, almost talking to herself now. "There will be no reasoning with him." A chime on the control panel, and Lannery groaned.
"What?"
Tree asked.
"Company."
On the scanner, three sparks were following them, closing rapidly. Lannery banked the ship steeply and accelerated, the hull shaking around them, groaning with the huge stresses she was placing it under. But she knew her ship as well as she knew herself, its breaking points, its capabilities. Still, the shapes closed on them.
"Fighters from Nul Tandor," Lannery said.
"And now they have a Jedi ship to add to their score sheet,"
Tree said. "I'll draw them out of the atmosphere.
The Peacemaker's better in space.
I can shoot.
You told me you'd never been in space.
Well, maybe once or twice. But I've fired land-based laser cannons 100 times. I have a good eye.
Top turret. Go.
Tree unclipped and scampered back into the living area, and Lannery charged up the laser cannons.
And put on the comlink so we can talk,
she shouted back at him. Strange. Right then, she was almost glad she had Tree here. She saw the terrible irony in the situation. Dale had made Nul Tandor believe that Greenwood Station was in league with the Jedi. Not only that, but some of that city's highest-standing residents might already have been assassinated by a Jedi sword. And now here they were, in the midst of their attack on Greenwood Station, and a Jedi was attempting to flee the planet, the Peacemaker ship giving her away. She had come here incognito, but might be leaving the seeds of a wider war behind. Right now, escape was her priority, and stopping Dale. Everything else could be smoothed over afterward. A few moments later, she heard the static and scratch of Tree turning on the comm headset in the top laser turret.
Okay, we're fired up. I think I have this. Foot pedals to turn the turret, tracking screen, combat display, touch trigger.
You damage my gun and I'll gut you!
Yeah, Jedi. You and which army?
Lannery laughed softly, always keeping her eyes on the closing targets. They had fanned out behind the Peacemaker and were approaching in a wide pincer. Soon the shooting would begin.
Front cannons will be in my control, Lannery said. But I'll be busy flying this thing as well. You've got the best field of fire behind us, and you'll have visual.
I've got visual.
You see?
Lannery was cut off by the dull thuds of the upper turret's laser cannons firing. Eyes on the screen, she twitched the ship to the left and hit the boosters. Then she switched on the Peacemaker's deflector shields and kept one hand hovering over their control lever. She'd have to angle the shields in accordance with which direction the next attack was coming.
Missed!
Tree shouted into her ears. She heard the gentle hum of the turret's motors working as Tree turned, and then the first ship streaked ahead of them. They were still in the upper reaches of the atmosphere. Lannery swung left, but heat flare glared across the windows, and she had to rely on scanners to keep tabs on the attacking Nul Tandor ships. They were fast and very maneuverable.
Tree?
Can't see much. Think I winged it.
Lannery flicked a switch so that the targeting computer display sprang up before her. Even before locking on, she let off a burst of fire, strafing across where the lead ship might fly. It twitched left and climbed. She thrust forward with all the power the ship had, and the attackers fell back a little. But she knew hers would be a momentary lead. Their ships would be at least as fast as the Peacemaker.
Right,
Tree muttered, and his cannon let off several sustained bursts.
Yes! One down! One down!
Good shooting,
Lannery said, but she was distracted. Shift deflector shield to the rear. Angle the ship out of the atmosphere. Keep an eye on trajectories and the bright sparks of the two remaining ships. Still talking to herself, even though Tree was there. For a moment, she wondered what she'd have done if he weren't with her. But then everything would have been very different. It was through his contacts on Nox that she'd been able to find Dale. The ship reached the highest extremes of Nox's polluted air, the stars speckling into view, and it was almost as if she felt it come alive in her hands. The Peacemaker was fine in atmospheres, but it was in the vacuum of space where it truly came into its own. We're away from Nox.
Good. I can see again.
Grav units phasing in.
Ah, great. There goes my stomach.
She grinned. They're following.
Didn't think they'd give up. You'd be a good prize.
And you?
I don't think they'd worry about...
The Peacemaker shook as a volley of shots smacked across its left flank.
Where'd that come from?
2 more from out of the sun.
Yeah, but...
His laser fired again, and he was muttering all the time, words Lannery could not quite make out. On the scanner, she saw another ship flare briefly into a hail of smaller parts, then expand into a cloud, then fade away.
Still 3 out there, she said.
Another ship powered toward them, then disappeared.
I've lost it.
Me too.
You can't see it?
No, gone. Can't you force see it or something?
Lannery ignored the quip and swung the ship sharply left and up, aiming for where she thought the ship might have gone. Climbing directly away from the Peacemaker and above them, it might for a moment have disappeared from her scanners, shielded by its exhaust and angle of climb. It was a good trick, but one Lannery knew. She'd used it once or twice herself. She saw the glimmer of starlight on metal before her scanner even picked it up. She closed her eyes and breathed deeply, comfortable in the force. Then she looked again, past the grid lines of the targeting computer, past the pulsing lights and scrolling figures of laser preparedness, target distance, altitude, and attitude. And when the time came, she touched the fire pad once. A single shot streaked ahead of them, and 8 kilometers away, the ship flowered into a blazing balloon.
Whoa! Good shot!
Those last two are coming in fast. One port, one starboard.
I'll take starboard.
The laser cannon thudded. Lannery took the ship through a roll and then powered directly up and away from Nox. Gravity grasped the vessel, as if sad to let go. The whole ship shook. She took manual control of the underside turret and swept it to port, watching the targeting grid on the left of her screen as the central 4 quadrants turned red. She fired several bursts, but already knew that she'd missed. Tree shouted,
"Look out! There!"
And then the whole ship shook as a plasma torpedo exploded 0.5 kilometer away, ignited by the ship's shielding system. Lannery let the blast tip the ship to starboard, knowing that fighting the effect would waste time and effort. Then she took control once again. "Everything at that port ship," she said, opening fire. Tree's cannon thumped, and she saw the streaking trails of laser blasts converging in the distance. On the scanner, the blooming star of destruction.
"Yes! One more down!"
"The other's making a run for it."
"Let's go! I'll put a shot into its afterburner!"
Lannery considered for a moment, then turned away from the fleeing ship. It was already 13 kilometers away, the distance between them growing fast. "No time," she said, "and no point." Tree was silent for a while. Then she heard his sigh. Relief, perhaps, and gratitude that they were still alive. "Stay up there a while," Lannery said. "They might have gotten a message off. Could be we have more company."
"Yeah."
Lannery muted the comm. In truth, there would be no more company, because she'd blocked the fighters' communications as soon as she'd seen them. But she wanted to take a moment on her own, compose herself, submit herself to the Force and every soothing, empowering aspect it meant to her. She breathed deeply and took a final look back down at Nox. Even from this far out, the dying city of Greenwood Station was the largest, most obvious feature on the planet they were leaving behind. Chapter 15. Randan's Folly.
"Jedi must know their limits. There are places we should not go, things we should not do, powers we should not seek. The Force has an incredible strength, but a Jedi's true strength is in knowing when to use it, and when not."
Master Shalma, A Life in Balance, 7541 TYA, Thoyor Arrival. She chases him across Tulse, alone, without weapons or supplies or equipment, following his trail where she can find it, doing her best to sense his presence and direction when she cannot, and it is 3 days before she has an inkling of where he is heading. Lannery knows she should not have simply run. She should have waited for Dan Powell, and now fears what the Jedi Master will think of her. But she is confident that she will not be a suspect in Scott Yoon's murder. And if she is, the time will come to put things right. Lannery is doing what she can to avoid losing her brother forever. Everything feels unreal, nightmarish. Dalian is a murderer. She has been made to grow up, and her world has changed forever. Tulse is a wild, sparsely populated land, and the farther south she goes, the more alien the landscape becomes. It is sometimes called the Dark Continent, and she is beginning to understand why. She descends from the hills onto a wide, endless plain, almost devoid of any plant growth over waist height. She wonders why for a while, and then half a day across the plain, the first of the winds strikes. An initial gust steals Lannery's breath and knocks her sideways, and she curls into a ball against a low rock as the most powerful wind she had ever known rips across the landscape. The tall, thin grasses that she has come to hate, her lower legs and hands are crisscrossed with cuts from the grass's sharp tips and sheer edges, whip around her, lying almost flat across her body and yet weathering the storm. She feels the dribble of blood from fresh grass-cut wounds, and now lying down, her face is lacerated as well. She struggles to breathe. All the time she is trying to make herself as small as possible and find as much shelter as she can behind the rock, she fears that Dale will continue walking through the storm. She pushes for him, taking comfort in flowing with the force. He is somewhere ahead, his mind a riot of confusion. It has been the same since leaving Anil Kesh, and Lannery is not certain whether it is intentional. He knows her so well, knows how she will try to reach him. Perhaps this is his best defense. Just before dusk, the winds start to ease, and she stands and hurries on. She is thirsty, hungry, and cold. Frost sheens countless blades of grass, hardening them, forming a landscape of glimmering jewels for as far as she can see in every direction. It is beautiful, and is like wading through a sea of blades. Dale, stop. For me, she thinks, pushing the thought as hard as she can ahead of her. There is no telling whether he hears. She has come to believe that the old city might be his destination. That's where the true Tithans lived, he used to say. So little was known of the city and its former inhabitants that she could not argue, and he had built a romanticized view of those tumbled ruins, pyramids, and the unplumbed depths of its caverns and canals. Some say the Gree built the old city and lived there for tens of millennia. Others postulate that the Gree merely borrowed the place for a while, and that its true builders were lost forever to the mists of deep history. It is a mystery, and mysteries of the past are what Dale seeks. The old city lies in the southern regions of Tulse, a wild, remote place called the Red Desert, frequented only by explorers and those desiring to leave civilization behind. It's said that the blood spites stalk the nights and haunt the underground. It is rumored that they are half plant, half animal, untouchable by Jedi talents, and that they feed on warm blood. She feels a frisson of fear when she thinks of it. Once there, what will Dale do? She cannot know. Perhaps he doesn't know either, and in that doubt might be her one chance to win him back. But he's a murderer. She tries to ignore the thought. She will confront that fully when she finds him, and decide what to do then. Confused, conflicted, Lannery finally leaves the plains of slashing grass and chases her brother into the first rolling dunes of the Red Desert. At dawn the next day, Lannery shivers awake from a dream. She is down in the darkness beneath the Red Desert. The weight of the old city hangs around her, crushing her from all directions with its enigmatic history and a million untold tales. She is in a network of elaborate caverns, all of them illuminated by flickering firelight burning somewhere out of sight. The walls and ceilings are beautifully inlaid with pictograms of the timeless Gree, and though she is certain they tell of long-forgotten histories, she cannot perceive the true stories. It's as if even with the truth laid out before her, she can never understand what happened here. And then the blood spites appear, soundless, deadly, bat-like things, the size of her head, with clasping tendrils and dripping teeth. She has no hope of fighting them off. They circle her in the confined spaces, darting in and biting chunks from her face, her neck, her waving arms. She feels no pain, but her blood flows. She cries out for help. Her brother watches from the shadows. Lannery sits up and stares up at the wide, star-speckled sky, The dream is already fading, as most dreams do, and she recognizes the blood spites from the few times she has read about them and how she imagines them to be. She has never seen any hollows or pictures. In her dream, they are monsters, but the real beast merely watched. It's a chilling sensation. As she rekindles her fire and looks for food and water, using survival skills taught to her by her parents from a young age, the idea of Dale as a monster does not fade. Her dream spills into waking hours, but perhaps in dreams, she could merely see the truth. She has only slept for a short time, and she hurries to pick up Dale's trail again. Trying to recall maps and legends of the Red Desert, she calculates that the old city might be 80 kilometers farther to the south. And though she has lost Dale's physical trail, she is now certain that the ruin is his destination. Lannery has always been fit, and she starts to run out across the larger dunes and into the Red Desert. She runs for 10 hours, pausing now and then in areas of ragged plant growth to dig for water. She overturns rocks and eats bugs and ants, and at one stage, she scares some desert wraths from a recent kill. The meat is rich and tough, and she eats it raw. The Red Desert is beautiful and daunting, barren and silent. It is a place that would inspire poets and madmen, and she does her best to remain inwardly focused as well as outwardly alert. It would be easy to lose oneself out here. Her sense of who she is remains firm, and there is a familiarity that gives her great comfort. The Force, strong in every sun-bleached rock and grain of sand. Just before dusk, she sees the first ruin. It is a tumbled wall at the base of a gentle slope, little more than a pile of blocks half-buried by shifting desert sands. But it is obviously not a natural formation. And the cold chill the sighting provokes convinces her that she is almost there. Lannery climbs the slope, and toward its summit she sees footprints. Pausing, she looks around, but Dale is nowhere in sight. She places her hand, fingers splayed, across one boot print in the sand, and closes her eyes. But the sands here are hot and ever-moving, and imbued with a timeless history, the breath of which startles her upright. Dale, we shouldn't be here. It is the first time she has spoken aloud since leaving Anil Kesh 3 days before. Nothing answers. Reaching the top of the hill, she emerges into the last of the day's sunlight once again. A kilometer to the west, the sun sinking into its ruin as if that place has always been its home, lie the sprawling remains of the old city. Wishing desperately that everything could be different, Lannery walks toward it. As she enters the shadow of the old city's largest pyramid, the first blood spite attacks. In the Peacemaker, pursuing Dale and his stargazers past Malterra's orbit and towards Sunspot, Trisana was quieter than Lannery had ever known him. But she did not question his silence. They had seen terrible things, witnessed a tragedy of shattering proportions. And though she knew of his past as a bad man, Tree's shock could not be feigned. The tracker seemed to be working well, and Lannery had plotted the projected course of Dale's ship 3 times. Each time the destination came out the same, Sunspot. And she thought she knew why. The incredible device had been built for the stargazers by the scientists of Pan Deep, but to charge it with its driving force, Dale had to visit Sunspot. The mines there were deep and incredibly dangerous, but the rewards for working there were great. Exotic elements that could be used for fuel or weapons, crystals that sang with force power, and perhaps, exposed to the correct technology, a touch of dark matter. Dale's ship had an 8 million kilometer head start. Lannery had tried plotting a more direct course to Sunspot, but following Dale would be the fastest route. She had pushed her Peacemaker to its greatest speeds, aware that the modification she had commissioned made it one of the fastest ships in the system. Yet Dale remained out of reach, matching her speed, forging the fastest route to meet Sunspot on its quick orbit of their star, Tythos. Settled into their route, Lannery initiated a contact with Master Dan Powell. It took a while for the signal to be acknowledged, and a while longer for the chime of an incoming connection.
Lannery,
Dan Powell said, and even before the flat screen snowed in to show her face, Lannery knew that the Master knew. I can't believe he did it. Just to cover his tracks. To make others think he was dead.
Perhaps there's more to it than that,
the Jedi Master said. She looked tired and drawn, and Lannery could only imagine the conversations she had been having with the Jedi Council. The diplomatic fallout with Nox, the efforts to calm a volatile situation. But that was beyond Lannery. She had to stay focused. What more? She asked.
He must have shared rare knowledge with Pandeep for them to make his device. To ensure his uniqueness, he'd have to kill them all.
But the whole of Greenwood Station? It's monstrous.
Not everyone died. Some transports got away before the final strike.
How many were lost?
So many that the numbers mean little.
The Master sighed heavily. Then she seemed to gather herself.
So, what progress have you made?
Dale and the Stargazers are traveling to Sunspot, I believe to arm the device. I have a trace on him and I'm following, but I'm hours behind.
You can't get in range to destroy his ship?
And kill my brother? Lannery thought, but she could not share that thought. No, Master. Whoever is funding his madness bought him quite a special ship. I can't read its signature, but it wouldn't surprise me to discover it's Jedi.
Stolen?
I can tell you more soon.
Sunspot and Molterra approach each other in their orbits,
Dan Powell said, frowning.
You know what happens once those planets draw close. Magnetic interference, space storms. Any space travel in their region will be impossible.
Then he's timed this to the heartbeat, Lannery said. He's planned everything in great detail. I'll have to catch him on Sunspot.
Do anything you have to, Lannery.
Of course.
Anything.
The Master's gaze softened. Lannery did not reply for a moment, and the silence between them was loaded. Then she thought of that madness of Dale's that she had barely touched down in Pandeep, and how all-consuming it had felt.
Be strong, Lannery. I know you are. But the responsibility is heavy. The price of failure might be unimaginable. So be strong. Experiences like this, such tragedies, can be what makes a good Jedi great. May the Force go with you.
Lannery nodded and broke the communication. She remained sitting in the cockpit for some time, thinking things through, saddened and afraid. And she surprised herself by finding comfort in Tree's presence. Her Twi'lek companion came to sit in the seat beside her. The last time they'd traveled like this, there had been a lightness to him, a protective bluster. No more. The silence was heavy, yet neither of them broke it. Lannery checked the ship's systems and kept an eye on the scanner, always aware of him sitting silently alongside. It was a long while after her communication with Dan Powell that Tree spoke at last.
I feel sick.
As do I, she said. Whatever Dale has become, I can't believe he would...
No, I mean...
Tree trailed off and then vomited copiously between his feet. Ironhulks crackled in alarm, and Lannery climbed from her seat and surveyed the mess. The ship's support systems sprang into overdrive, but the air filters could not work fast enough to swallow the stink.
Oh,
Lannery said. Tree was panting and wiping his mouth, sweating, shivering.
Sorry.
Nox, she said. We breathed too much of its atmosphere.
You?
I feel fine. Do I? She thought. She assessed herself and found nothing of concern, save her mixed emotions about Dale. But there were still 2 days traveling until they reached Sunspot. If Tree sickened, there was nothing she could do but practice the medical skills she had learned at Maharakesh. And if he died, there was the airlock. But she could not fall ill. She only hoped that Tree's sickness was a result of Nox's poisonous atmosphere, not something more insidious he might have caught. If at any point he appeared contagious, she might have to take action. She looked away from Tree for a moment at the cockpit screens. The signal from Dale's ship was still on the tracker, still 8 million kilometers ahead of them. She could not take any risks. But she knew she could never throw Tree from the airlock alive. "Use my cot to rest," she said. "I'll clean it up. Drink plenty of water." Tree did not argue. He pushed past her, lay on her cot, and slept almost instantly. Lannery looked down at the vomit spread across the cockpit floor. "I wish you had arms," she said to Iron Hulks. The droid grated something that sounded like a chuckle. Over the next 2 days, Tree did not grow any worse, but neither did he improve. He ate small amounts of food, but more often than not brought it back up. He drank plenty of water. Shivering and sweating in Lannery's cot, his sleep was troubled, and his dream mumblings were incoherent and disturbing. Lannery spent most of the time in her cockpit seat, keeping track of Dale's ship and catching brief, uncomfortable naps. Her dreams were vague and unpleasant. She woke more than once with the idea that something was flapping silently about her head, slashing with barbed tendrils and seeking her blood. And she had one dream where she watched from outside the system as Tython itself, and Tythos, and then every planet and moon that orbited it, was swallowed to nothing. Billions of lives and loves and dreams wiped out almost in the blink of an eye. As they approached Sunspot at last, she accessed the ship's computers to remind herself about the damned place. She knew that environmentally it was even more unwelcoming and harsh than Nox. Her research reminded her how much so. Sunspot was the first planet of the system. Its orbit sometimes took it as close as 48 million kilometers from Tythos. It was considered a solid planet, yet much of its surface was in constant turmoil, volcanoes and quakes changing its landscape almost from day to day. Its more settled areas were mainly at the poles, and it was here that the scattered mining communities were located. It was perhaps the harshest inhabited environment in the Tython system, yet the rewards for the miners were huge. Most only lasted one or two seasons before leaving the planet and vowing never to return. Around 10% of those who went to Sunspot seeking their fortunes died there. It was a hungry planet, and though it gave, it also took as much as it could. It was also a curiosity in the system, because it orbited counter to every other planet. There were those who speculated that it was a rogue planetoid, tumbled into Tythos' gravity well in the distant past. This raised some startling ramifications, and 3,000 years ago there had been a series of exploratory missions visiting the planet, searching for any signs of previous habitation. But none had ever been found. No trace of civilizations, no ruins, no evidence that any sort of life had ever flourished there. Sunspot was a dead planet that breathed the white-hot breath of molten rock, and the rest of the system regarded it merely as a resource. Even approaching Sunspot's dark side, the violence of its surface was obvious. It radiated a steady glow from a fine network of volcano ranges and magma lakes and rivers, and the shadows of noxious gas clouds the size of a continent filtered the light, turning it an almost attractive pinkish hue. "Southern Pole," Lannery said. Dale's ship had slowed considerably and was entering the atmosphere, swinging around to approach Sunspot's south pole from the planet's dark side. She had already calculated a similar path, and the Peacemaker's computer was taking them in. There was a possibility that Lannery could even close the gap between them and shoot Dale down before he landed. Her customized laser cannons were powerful and accurate, and the Peacemaker carried 4 drone missiles that were effective at 800,000 kilometers. But if she missed, he would be alerted to her presence. Yes, that was why she didn't open fire. The advantage of surprise. She convinced herself of this as she made ready to take to the surface, and Tree watched her every move.
"I wish I could come with you," he said for the 10th time.
"No, you don't," Lannery said.
"True, I don't. You take me to the nicest places,"
says the Twi'lek who took me to the pits. Tree watched as Lannery prepared herself. She changed her clothing, and lacking her lost sword, she plucked a spare sword from a cabinet beneath her cot. It was the weapon she had trained with before Master Tem Madog had forged her own. She hefted it in her hands, swung it several times, and remembered its weight. It was a surprising comfort.
It becomes you, Tree said.
It'll have to do. She sheathed the sword, the screech lizard sheath remained at her hip, and knelt by the cot again. She removed two blasters from the cabinet and slipped them into her belt. Tree watched, eyebrows raised. Lannery only shrugged. A chime from the cockpit signaled that their descent had begun. She felt the familiar shifting in her stomach as they entered the atmosphere, and the peacemaker's grav units faded out, and she watched Tree, wondering if he'd vomit again. But he held himself together. She indicated that he should strap himself in, then sat next to him on the cot.
You don't want to land the ship yourself?
He asked. I will, once we're close to the surface. But Tree, she squeezed his shoulder. I'm leaving you in my peacemaker. My ship. This is my home, and I'm trusting you to treat it well.
I'll guard it, he said.
Ironholgs can do that, and the ship has its own defenses. Just don't touch anything. Anything.
Trust me,
he said, smiling. His eyes were watery and weak, his skin pale, Leku limp. I have to, she said. The peacemaker rocked and kicked as it sliced down into Sunspot's violent atmosphere. Lights glowed, warnings chimed from the control panels, and the screens darkened as heat burned across the hull. Lannery climbed into her flight seat, taking control of the ship. She checked the scanner, uploaded a terrain map onto another screen, and accessed the ship's computer to download as much information as she could find about the area. Dale and his stargazers had landed at a small mining outpost called Randan's Folly. According to her records, the mine worked a deep source of plutonium and marionium, both elements used to power ships' drives, and that could also be weaponized. The mine had been in existence for almost 100 years, and there seemed to be nothing spectacular about it that set it aside from any other Sunspot business concern. A tragedy 30 years ago in which 100 miners lost their lives, a strike 18 years ago that led to violent riots, and an eventual buyout by the workforce and their families off-planet. Shipping and trade deals with parties on at least 3 planets, including Typhon. If Randan's Folly was a source of dark matter, nothing had ever been noticed, and no one knew. No one but Dale. Lannery experienced a brief, chilling fear that her brother had found the tracking device she'd planted on him and placed it on another ship. She'd followed for 3 days, and all the while, he had been heading for Typhon. Perhaps he had a supply of dark matter already sourced and waiting to be implanted in the device. Maybe even now he was on Typhon, down in the old city, going deeper than anyone had ever been and readying to activate the Hypergate. Any moment now. If it's even there, she muttered. She was still unsure. In all this, the Hypergate's existence was the one nebulous factor. But whether it existed or not, the danger was just as pressing. This is Dale, she said, watching the scanner as it tracked his ship until it landed. The red spot became blue as it fell motionless, and Lannery dipped the peacemaker to the south so that she could approach Randan's Folly over a blazing rift in the planet's surface. She needed as much cover as possible. She also needed a plan. But time was short. Malterra and Sunspot grew closer. Dale was still one step ahead. She would have to make this up as she went along. Lannery crouched behind a rock, looking at the mine and the haphazard collection of buildings around it, and wondered how anyone could live there. The minehead itself was at the base of a slope of shale and tumbled rocks, encased in a rickety steel structure with 2 giant lifting cranes protruding through the roof. The surrounding buildings were low, built almost entirely from rock, and connected by chains, presumably for navigation between buildings during the terrible storms that swept the area. There were no windows. 3 heavily armored land cruisers were parked close against the building's walls, and the wrecks of several more were scattered around the area, slowly corroding into the sterile ground. Further along the low valley were 3 landing pads for whatever freighters and other craft could be used in such an atmosphere. Dale's ship rested on one of these pads, and Lannery knew now why she had not been able to run him down. His ship was a Death Blaster, and one that had seen action, perhaps even during the Despot War. A great swath of its left flank was scorched black, and areas of the hull had obviously been replaced and repaired, judging by their color and styling differences. It was a mean-looking craft, sister ship to the renowned Deathstalkers, except large enough to carry a payload of bombs, equipment, or passengers. They were even rarer than Deathstalkers now. Many had been destroyed during the Despot War, many more dismantled afterward by the Jedi. And those that survived were usually in the hands of mercenaries, Chicaqua warlords, or at remote criminal settlements out on some of Maurer's moons. From the speeds Dale's ship had attained, there was a good chance that it had been customized. She checked the area one more time from behind the rock pile, then ran at a crouch toward the Death Blaster. She kept to the shadows, knowing that Dale would have left some of his stargazers preparing the ship for a rapid escape. Probing out gently, she sensed two minds, their thoughts untroubled. The stargazers were excited. Their plans were coming to fruition. She wondered what Dale would say if he knew how much they had lowered their guard. The moment begged for action, not diplomacy. And though disabling them would have been her preference, Lannery could not risk even the slightest chance of these two coming around while she was down in the mine. Before she moved, she sought comfort in the Force for what she was about to do. Desperate measures for desperate times, she thought. And she remembered how so many had died in agony on Nox. Close to the ship's still-hot engines, the Iktochi woman didn't know what had hit her as Lannery's sword parted her head from her shoulders and severed the long, distinctive horns. She darted up the ramp into the ship, where the second stargazer stood comically motionless, head cocked at the strange sound of steel cleaving flesh he'd heard from outside.
"Don't!"
he said, and Lannery stabbed him through the heart. He was dead before he slumped to the deck. She glanced around the ship's hold. Empty, and now deserted but for the dead. She ran back down the ramp and headed for the mine. The blazing air burned her lungs, and she knew she should have donned a protective suit and breathing apparatus. But she did not